Welcome to Extra Time, a weekly conversation with the national newspaper staff writers and editors on UAE and international sports. It is Wednesday, November 13th. I'm Chitrabhanu Kadlail for the national.ae. 50,118 runs, 142 centuries, 245 half centuries, 274 wickets, and 389 catches later, Sachin Tendulkar is finally getting ready to bid his 25-year cricket career goodbye. He will be playing in his 200th and final test match against West Indies starting tomorrow in Mumbai. And with me to discuss the storied career of this great Indian batsman is Usman Samiuddin, the national staff writer. So Usman, my first memory of Sachin Tendulkar in action was a good 5 years after he made his test debut. It was during a one-day international in 1994 between India and Australia in the Single World Series in Colombo. And it also happened to be the first time Tendulkar scored an ODI century. I knew little about cricket back then, but you know, I do remember finding the game sublime so long as Tendulkar had a bat in his hand. Did you have that sort of an experience when you first watched him play?
I was trying to think of this the other day. I don't think I remember when I first saw him play or when he first kind of entered my mind. I think it was on that debut tour to Pakistan, in fact, when there was a lot of hype around him, but I was more kind of looking out for Sanjay Manjrekar, who was a really, really big batsman at that time. I think Tendulkar first started kind of coming into my conscience when he went to play for Yorkshire. And it was such a big deal because he was, you know, the first foreign player, or I think he was the second foreign player after Craig McDermott to go there. So I think that's when I first kind of started realizing that this little guy is a pretty big deal. And then it just started, like the 96 World Cup, even the 92 World Cup, the matches in Sharjah and stuff. And then you just started watching him bat and he kind of just exploded into your brain.
Right. Do you have a moment where you watched him play and you said, my God, this guy is absolutely magical? I mean, this is the first time you possibly watched him on TV or in a stadium.
Yeah, you know, many times. The first time I remember thinking, because he I used to watch him a lot against Pakistan. And he had early on like a fairly ordinary kind of record for his kind of career. He had a fairly ordinary record against Pakistan. And I think the first time I really kind of... One was that Chennai test, of course, where made like 136 and they still lost. But I think the first time that I really kind of had to sort of sit back in like a stunned silence, I think, must have been that match at Centurion against Pakistan in the 2003 World Cup. It's a match which, you know, even my father, who was not really a cricket guy, kind of watched his innings and started thinking that, you know, this guy's a player. And he hit that, he had that over against Shoaib Akhtar where he hit that 1-6, then he clipped one to square leg for four. And then he hit that last shot that was like a defensive check, which flew past mid-on for four. And that was just like, you know, that was, okay, so this is Sachin Tendulkar of India. That was probably that moment, you know, when he kind of like really, really kind of, and that was like very late in his career, you know, it was like 15 years after he began the game.
It's curious you mentioned that because I remember you wrote a piece in which you had this, you had this argument with your father as to who was a greater batsman, Sachin Tendulkar or Rahul Dravid. And your dad, being a professor of statistics, was obviously giving these numbers and trying to prove that Dravid was obviously a superior batsman to Tendulkar. And I think he watched that one shot, the shot you're talking about, which went past mid-on. Was it long on? And then, you know, he just said, okay, I think I resign. I think this is... Tendulkar at his best, even Dravid cannot match him.
Yeah, my father, you've got to understand, my father had no time for cricket at all for much of his life. He went to a test match in the 60s, I think, in Dhaka. And he walked out like 2 hours in because he was just too bored and it was too hot. He had no time at all for it. He was a stats guy, he was a stats professor. And he started watching when I started writing more about it. And then we were watching this match and he'd been contending for a long time that, you know, if you take the standard deviation, which is a real kind of nerdy stats term, but if you take the standard deviation of these batsmen, and that kind of measures the difference each time you go out to bat from what your average is. So, you know, if Tendulkar makes 200 in one innings and four zeros or three zeros, he still averages 50. But someone like Dravid would have a lower standard deviation and he would make maybe, I don't know, 50, 70, 80. Like that. His contention was that Dravid, every time he would go out to bat, would be closer to his average, would score closer to his average than Tendulkar would. And in his world of stats, that was like the ultimate thing, you know. And then he saw this innings with me, the same Centurion innings, and he saw that one last shot. And I remember distinctly, he just said that, it was kind of just like a giveaway, kind of sniffy remark. He just said that, oh yeah, you know, maybe Dravid can't do what happened just there, and that was like the end of the argument. That I think Tendulkar had made it in my father's head at that stage.
Right. Now, I mean, you and I are cricket fans, but we're also cricket journalists, and I was covering the Mumbai Test between India and England in 2006 when the crowd, you know, in the home crowd, booed Tendulkar as he got out for a low score. I remember I think he was caught behind off Jimmy Anderson. And I had never seen Sachin Tendulkar being bored. You know, I've watched most of his career and I've covered a lot of his matches. But, you know, unfortunately for me, it just remains the most memorable or not so memorable moment covering Sachin as a reporter. I mean, do you have a moment that you will cherish or you'll at least remember for a very long time?
You know, I got to, because he didn't play Pakistan that often. Uh-huh. But ultimately, I got to cover, like, I think, 7 or 8 or even 9 of the tests that he played against Pakistan. And I remember him in, because the period that I watched him play, he was overshadowed completely by Virendra Sehwag, especially against Pakistan.
You're right, yeah.
And so when I saw him play, he the first time I saw him play live was in Multan in that test match,
mm-hmm.
In which Sehwag got 300.
Right.
That was the first time I'd seen him in a test match. And Tendulkar got 194.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember it as a really unremarkable, but very obviously exceptional innings. It was completely unremarkable in the sense that, you know, it was completely what you would expect of Tendulkar.
Right.
The Pakistan's attack was tired, the pitch was flat, there was no crowd there, and Tendulkar came and scored his runs, and he just thought, yeah, he's good, he's going to score that much.
Right.
But the controversy that came, you'll remember this, the controversy after, because he was declared on 194 by Dravid, who was standing in for Ganguly then.
Mm.
And the controversy was the first time, because it spread like a whisper in the press room. Tendulkar came, gave his press conference in which he said that, yeah, I was a little bit surprised and disappointed that I was declared on.
Mm-hmm.
And just the whisper that spread right after that. And by the time we got back to our press box, to our laptops, it had become like the national scandal of the day in India, you know. And the next, I think, 3 days were devoted just to whether Dravid should have declared and whether Ganguly had a hand in it or not.
Yeah,
so that was probably, you know, I mean, it's not a memorable moment, mm-hmm. but it's kind of something that I remember the most about how the whole Tendulkar phenomenon and the industry around Tendulkar, which is, I think, one of the things that I remember the most about Tendulkar is the industry that kind of was created around him in India and around the world, in fact.
Right.
And it was just one of those things, you know, that you couldn't miss.
Mm. I've watched a lot of India-Pakistan cricket matches, and you know, I used to be very envious of the Pakistan bowling attack, you know, particularly Wasim Akram. I always wished he was part of the Indian cricket team. Did you, or for that matter, did you feel other Pakistan cricket fans had that sort of, or felt that sort of envy of, you know, for the Indian team for having Tendulkar amongst them and not in the Pakistan dressing room?
You know, I don't want to speak for 180 million people, but I would say, I don't know, Pakistan has a strange kind of relationship with Tendulkar. I think a lot of them obviously recognize that he is a great, but there, you will find a lot of people who will kind of latch on to this whole thing that, oh, you know, he didn't win India enough matches. Oh, he's a product of Indian marketing hype.
Mm.
Oh, he's a product of this new India economy, which kind of hypes up even the more ordinary kind of guys. I think you will find that kind of skepticism there. But I think that's got like a logical root to it. I think it comes mainly from the fact that he had a fairly ordinary record against Pakistan, and
mm-hmm.
you know, some very ordinary bowlers got him out a lot, like Abdul Razak. Akib Javed wasn't an ordinary bowler, but you know, he got him out a lot. Shahid Afridi, I think, has got his wicket three times in Test matches. So I think it partly comes from this, from being proud that he didn't really have a great record against Pakistan.
Mm.
But I think there is obviously also envy in there, because you know, Pakistan, given the state of their batting for much of the last 20 years, maybe even more since the 70s, I think,
mm-hmm.
They've not had, you know, anyone come even close to his kind of success.
Right.
Imran Khan used to say that Inzamam is more naturally talented, but I think that was just, you know, Imran's bluster more than anything. I don't think Inzamam was anywhere close to what the kind of impact that Tendulkar had on batting. So I think, you know, it's a mix of envy. There is a lot of admiration there, of course, as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a mixture of a lot of things. And again, I'd just like to say that I'm no spokesman for like 180 million people. So that's just my thought on the whole thing.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned Inzamam Al-Haq. I was just going to ask you how he compares in your estimation with the likes of, okay, maybe not Inzamam anymore, but Lara, Ponting, maybe even Callis.
Oh, that's a difficult one, you know. I mean, personally, I always loved watching Brian Lara more.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because, you know, Lara had this element of risk about him. And he was kind of like the the guy you shouldn't watch because, you know, he could get out for the first ball as well, and he had that really high, immense back lift, and he was technically a little bit iffy. But then I would say that among maybe Callis and Ponting, I'd prefer to watch Tendulkar any day.
Right.
As far as, you know, who was a better batsman, I think it's tough because Tendulkar for the... He always had good batsmen around him, but I don't think he's ever had the kind of bowlers that Ponting and Callis had to make their records. And you know, it makes a big difference. You know,
right,
if your bowlers have knocked over some team for 150,
right,
and you come out to bat and you've got great openers ahead of you, as Ponting did, if you've got Hayden and Langer and Slater and Taylor at some point, and if you've got Graham Smith coming ahead of you as Jack Callis, then you know you're assured a pretty good start. I don't think Tendulkar always had great openers, certainly not at the start of his career until Sehwag came. I would say purely as a batsman, I don't think Ponting or Callis were as sound and as adaptable as Tendulkar became. You know, he went through many phases in his batting as well, and I don't think either of them were as kind of open to change as Tendulkar was. So, removing Lara from the conversation, I would personally, you know, prefer to watch Tendulkar over Ponting and Callis.
Right. Now, for those who do not follow cricket all that much, I mean, you may be surprised to find Sachin has a strong bond with the Sharjah Cricket Stadium. Now, three of his most memorable, indeed remarkable innings, at least in one-day cricket, came at this venue. And he scored a match-winning 118 against Pakistan in 1996, which helped India score their first ever total in excess of 300. And then, of course, 2 years later, he scored back-to-back centuries, during a desert storm in Sharjah against Australia. Of these three innings, which one particular innings would you pick as your favorite Sharjah knock?
Oh, easily the second one, the one which got India into the final.
Right.
Even though I think they lost the game ultimately by 20 runs or something, but they had to get to a certain score to get past it. And
right.
I think that one, because you could kind of see, I think those were the days when Tendulkar was still just a complete, like, he could turn it on when he wanted. You know, he still had that risk in his game, which he completely eliminated towards the end of his career. He still had that risk in him at that time, and he still had this young kind of this kind of get-go spirit where he would just go after bowlers and he would be relentless on them. And I think he just decided at some point in that match, he just decided that, right, you know, and I think he said this, I read this in an interview later, that he kind of decided that he wanted to just win the tournament for India.
Right.
And I think it happened in that match when he just decided that, okay, you know, we're not doing anything here, we're kind of floating,
right,
and I need to go after these guys. And the way he just kind of erupted, I think it's difficult to forget. I rate it higher than his other, the century that came a few days later, even though I think that won the game for India, didn't
right.
The next one.
Yes.
Yeah, this one, I think, because it was such a stiff target to try and kind of reach first, just the way you could kind of see that he just decided to take it on, kind of like he did at Centurion against Pakistan in 2003. So I think it would be that middle 100 that, you know, I choose.
To be the highest, to be your favorite.
I think so, yeah. Out of those three, definitely.
And final question, Osman. What sort of legacy do you believe Sachin is leaving behind? Tough one.
I think he's left India a better team. There's no doubt about that. He's probably left more people playing cricket than before he came, which is a big thing to do in a place like India where everyone plays cricket anyway.
Right.
I think he's strengthened this tradition of strong Indian batting, particularly like this Mumbai school of batting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, legacies and all. I mean, he won a World Cup. He changed the face, I think, of the professional cricketer in India.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy we'll come to know in 20 years' time, you know, when some new 16-year-old kid signs up like a multi-billion dollar deal with some sponsor somewhere in India, you know. So legacy I'll pass on. But I think, you know, he left India definitely a better cricket side than when he joined it.
We'll leave it there for now. Usman Samiuddin is a staff writer at the National Newspaper. This episode is edited by Deepthi Unnikrishnan and produced by the National's Multimedia Desk. I'm Chitrabhanu Kadalail.